Monday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. Danny, hello.
How are you doing, man?
I'm really good. I decided to dispense with the introduction because I'm just not very good at them. How do you feel about
I'm
that?
I'm good with it.
All right. Well, so we've got a couple of interesting segments on tap for today in addition to our usual game recap. Which teams it's time to panic for? And Ethan always likes to talk about how he just loves panicking and the team should panic or at least fan bases should panic just because, you know, why not? So there are seven teams, I think, that are kind of in trouble compared to what preseason expectations might have been for them. So we'll talk about those seven teams. You'll find out who those are in just a bit. So that's what we'll be doing towards the end. But let's start with a little bit of news here. Not a ton around, but Jabari Parker out with a mid-foot sprain. I'm not sure. There wasn't really much detail on when he sustained it. It sounds like a relatively minor foot sprain, that at least that he's going to be out for three games, which is, but nothing more than that. Doesn't sound like surgery is required or anything of that ilk. But too bad, because he had just had his best game of the season against the Cavs and was kind of starting to ramp up a little bit. There was talk that his minutes limit was going to go up to 30 from 25, but unfortunately a setback for him now.
Yeah, it's disappointing because he was looking a lot better. He had a couple nice dunks in that game too. He's looked good since he's been back, and he's not even making the road trip, right?
Yes, that's
so
right.
So he's just out. So you can just that's disappointing in a way, but I think that's the right way to play. You know, just take the piece off the board for now. No reason to rush it.
Yeah. Any other news that we have to talk about? Nothing comes to mind as being incredibly
important. Really. I mean, Durant said he's feeling closer to being back, but that's what you'd expect for a guy who was supposed to be out 7 to 10 days. So.
Yeah, and he had a nice quote that basically a hamstring is not the sort of thing that you can push. Being a tough guy, he says it's not being tough, it's being dumb, essentially, which I thought I liked that quote from him. That's exactly what it should be when it comes to soft tissue injuries, which muscle injuries, which we haven't seen from certain other teams that we've talked about before. But all right, let's get into perhaps the biggest game of the night for me, the one that I concentrated on the most. That was the Boston-Houston game, and Houston is looking like they are in big trouble right now. They got blown out in the third quarter by Boston. It was really just not a good look for them at all. 32-13 in that third quarter, and that was after they actually had a 10-point lead and gave it up in the second quarter and were playing pretty well. They gave up 6 offensive rebounds in that third quarter. The Celtics had 5 steals. They were getting to pretty much every loose ball. 7 turnovers in total for the Rockets in that quarter. And 5 out of 17 from the field, even though they were 3 of 8 on threes. So it was really just not good at all. Ty Lawson, 0 shot attempts during that quarter. Howard only had 1. And they didn't get much out of their bench either. On the other hand, the Celtics team is looking pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, so what was interesting for me with this was what I watched most closely was the second quarter when the Rockets actually looked pretty good. But then when I saw what happened in the third quarter, it wasn't all that surprising because there were some real trouble signs in that second quarter, particularly the fact that they were choosing or whatever to leave Kelly Olynyk open every single possession, which is never a good sign because he can shoot.
Yeah, they were getting some pretty wide open shots, the Celtics were, all throughout the first half, and just and also just getting a ton of threes, even though they weren't necessarily going in. So it was not good at all. Jay Crowder had a fantastic game in this game also. They did a nice job on Harden overall. I mean, for Houston, just their defense is not good enough. That's number one. They just were giving up a ton of open shots. And Harden was really, after watching him again, you know, just does not make an effort play. And perhaps even more concerningly, though, for him, when's the last time you saw him make a play where you were like, wow, that was a pretty athletic play? It's been forever that's happened.
It's been a while. I think I remember one early in the season, but he hasn't really popped to me in that way. And that's concerning because we're 10 games in now. I mean, we're more than enough of the season now that if you have any rust early on that maybe your jump shot isn't going, but that you're making plays like that, and it's definitely concerning.
Yeah, and Trevor Ariza started shooting a little bit better, but he's been off. Corey Brewer has really regressed, and that was actually, I think, probably the only contract I could think of in the Daryl Morey era that I haven't particularly liked for them. And I think they thought, well, he's a rotation guy. You'd sign him to $7 million a year, and you know, you can always move him later. That's once a guy's making $7 million, that's like eighth, ninth man money. That's kind of what he is once the cap goes up. But I don't know. I think he might be getting to the point where he's not even really a playable guy as his athleticism starts to decline. Getting out in the fast break was always one of his strengths, but he's never going to be a guy who's going to shoot more than, you know, maybe 32% or so on threes at not a particularly high volume. And he gets steals, but he's not really a great one-on-one defender. He's not shooting a good percentage so far. They can't really get much out of the four. Terrence Jones had a really bad defensive game. He every time he closes out on someone at the three-point line, he basically seems to jump at a pump fake and give up a straight-line drive. So I don't know. You're hard-pressed to think of. And Dwight, well, he's been putting up some good numbers, does not appear to be the athletic force he was, even going back to last year's playoffs. By the way, James Harden, one dunk on the year.
Wow.
That is rather troubling. He had 33 dunks last year.
And
has been he's never had less than 25 in his career.
And something that I pulled up originally for a later segment, but I think is kind of a good way of talking about their issues right now. So last year they ended the year obviously as successful. They ended with the 2 seed. They were 12th in offense and they were 6th in defense. Right now they're 19th in offense, so you know that's down, but not horrendously down. And they're 29th in defense. It's hard to win games when you're that low in defense.
Yeah, Mikhail tinkered with the rotation this time. He tried to go big more. Montrezl Harrell, after sitting out some games with an ankle injury, I think, was back in the rotation at the four. Capella had a few moments playing at the five. Marcus Thornton didn't play at all until they were down by 20, basically. So he tried to go with more size, more defense. But who is a reliable defensive player on this team at this point? Beverly is out. Lawson has looked really slow. You know, he used to pop as a guy who really was a fast player, and now he has not been that. They've been trying to stagger he and Harden more. You know, he went out with basically 6 minutes left in the first and third quarter, and they brought in Jason Terry and actually played a little bit better when Terry was on the floor. But they just have a ton of problems. They're not defending. Harden doesn't look good enough. They've got health issues. Lawson doesn't look good. And it's not just a question of, oh, he's not fitting in. He just, even when he does try to make a play, he doesn't look like the speedy guy that we remember from Denver. There's not enough shooting on the floor. You know, all right. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here because we're going to talk about the time to panic, but I think you're getting a little preview of kind of what I'm thinking about for this team right now.
And something you tweeted out during the game that I thought was really astute is that Robert Covington, while I totally understand why he's not still on this team, Robert Covington would be awesome on the Rockets right now.
Yeah, and they basically released him. I forget what move it was that they made. It might have been, no, I think it was pretty early on. I don't think it was the Josh Smith, but early on in the year, I mean, he was on basically the Hinkie special contract in Houston, and they waived him, and Houston and Philly picked him up. And, you know, he's a guy who can shoot, defend okay. Like, they could really use a wing guy like that.
Even dabble a little bit in the four when they've been having that issue where they've been playing Marcus Thornton and all that kind of stuff. Also, they played KJ McDaniels 9 minutes, which was thrilling to me, though I don't know if that was in real time.
No, that was a garbage time.
I'm so sad.
Yeah, and
a guy who can defend conceptually.
Yeah, theoretically, but you have to imagine there's a reason why he hasn't been playing, but they've just have been so bad in the effort categories. I think that you just have to kind of, and he at least is athletic and can get out and run. I mean, they're just not, he's someone that you can at least probably hopefully count on to play hard. Even if he's going to make mistakes, his athleticism can help to erase them.
I think we also should talk about Marcus Smart, because even though another great example of a guy who can help a team without necessarily putting up points.
Yeah, he was terrible from the field. His jumper was totally off. I don't know if he even had a field goal.
He had one.
in this game. Yeah, so, and maybe not during the competitive portion of the game, but he did play great D on Harden. He's a guy who gets every loose ball, goes after every rebound. He had a couple of plays in this game where the guy tried to just, like, rip it through in front of him when he was guarding him, and he just took the ball out of their hands. You know, he's once he gets his hands on the ball, like, it's not going out of his hands. Like, he just is that intense and that strong that you just, like, guys are just shocked by the intensity with which he goes after the ball. And the Rockets don't have as many of those guys. A couple other notes in this game. Tyler Zeller came in and played some effective minutes as the Celtics got back into it in the second quarter. I think he's still an effective player. He's someone I think that the Celtics might try and move, and there are teams that definitely could use another big man. I think he would be totally useful in, say, New Orleans or Indiana, especially with Miles Turner out. Quite a few other places. I think even you could look at Washington, although he's kind of more of a center, so maybe not them as much. But there are certainly teams that could use him because he may not be like a good starting center, but he's a high-end backup or low-end starter, and there are a lot of teams that don't even have guys of that quality.
Yeah, there definitely are. And
he's not going to play here. Now, maybe you could say he'll be part of the plan once Lee leaves after next year because he can be a free agent, but how much are they really going to want to pay him? I could see him getting an offer sheet that they're just not going to want to match, although he does have a little bit lower of a cap hold. But if you could get, I mean, what would you give up for Tyler Zeller right now, knowing that he's going to have to get a raise next year? I mean, he seems like he might be kind of like a 1.5 round pick kind of guy.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what I was going to say. I don't think, unless I was in a very specific circumstance because of his low salary, so if I could get him, you know, basically just for the pick, I don't think I'd give up a first for him. But I a second would be fine. I mean, maybe not one of those first two or three, you know, the really good second round picks, like the one that wasn't Chetty Osman, like the 31st pick. Like,
yeah,
that's a great one to have. But, you know, maybe,
yeah, because that's the first international guy who, you know, you're not going to be able to buy him out with the rookie scale, so you have to pay him a little bit more. You know, that's the Omer Asik pick.
Was it Pekovic that pick too, or was he 34?
Can't recall, but it's usually a lot of those international guys who have big buyouts will go at that time. Terrence Jones, you know, he's another one of these guys that we talked about, right, where he's just kind of a guy who doesn't do a lot. I mean, you know, he has, like, nice box score stats. He's had, like, a high PER in his career, but he's not going to shoot from the outside. He's not really going to score one-on-one. He's a guy who's a great opportunity double. And I'm going to start using that term more. It's basically sort of the Taj Gibson rule, where it's a guy who, yeah, you know, he might be able to score every once in a while in the post, depending on who's guarding him. But he's so bad at passing out of double teams and so not used to it that when he drives the post up, you almost can view it as an opportunity to force a turnover by double teaming him. I think he's definitely one of those kind of guys. And he's got to start playing a lot better for this team, because if not, then you want to try and go small, but they just don't have the personnel necessarily to go small. Harden is not going to give enough effort to play big minutes at the four. Ariza is a guy who, while he can sort of be the four, he's also has to be guarding the best wing threat on the other team. So he can't be close to the basket to help rebound. So now you're playing Harden as basically the four, and you're going to get killed on the glass. So that's a big reason why their small lineups haven't been effective, and why I thought maybe someone like McDaniels could be useful there, although he can't shoot the ball really any better than Jones can. So they're just, I think maybe if they could get another guy back, and maybe Muddy Unis is that guy, especially, you know, but Howard is missing time too, so they'll need him more, I think, as a center. It's hard to say really what this team, how this team gets better, other than, you know, Harden picking it up a little bit, but, and maybe Lawson as well. But I don't know. I think that they are definitely a player short, you know, as a versatile four, because they're just not getting enough from that position right now. And whereas Lawson and Harden, you just have to hope they'll play better. Maybe that's where a move could be made at some point.
Instead of continuing to poach our content for later in the podcast, do you want to talk about, you want to move on to something else for now?
Yeah, let's talk about the Memphis-Oklahoma City game. And I think we should start with the aesthetics, because that Memphis uniform, one of maybe the top five NBA uniforms that I've ever seen. That Memphis, is it Memphis Sounders, the ABA team?
I think it's Sounds.
Sounds, yeah. Well, which makes sense, because there are some great sounds that come out of Memphis.
Absolutely.
So.
And the coloring on it was beautiful. They're just gorgeous. They're gorgeous uniforms, and they're one of those that's so nice that it makes me wonder why they can't either rename the team because Grizzlies isn't appropriate, or just fully on, just take everything from that, because they just look amazing.
Yeah, you know, Zach Lowe had in his column that the NBA doesn't like it when they go back to just straight up retro stuff, because that's already sort of licensed for like hardwood classics or whatever. What are your like favorite normal uniforms in the NBA?
Okay, favorite normal. I really like the Nets. It's simple, black and white, but I think they're really nice. Like, it's crazy how many of my favorites are older ones. The Celtics are always good, and
they're just simple.
Simple.
Right?
The Bulls are good, and they echo some previous. And also, those teams have had success in those uniforms. But I think those are the ones that really stand out to me. Also, the new Bucks uniforms I really like.
I like those a lot. They're really, other than the Thunder. I can't really think of that many teams whose uniforms I don't particularly like anymore. I mean, the Suns have some that are not amazing, but other than that, I think most of the uniforms in the NBA are pretty good.
Oh, Utah's road jerseys—we have to talk about that.
Those are awesome. I really like the Raptors' new kits too. A lot of people don't like them that much. I think that font and sort of the circular kind of old school—I don't even know what that's called because I'm not as much of an expert on this—but just like how they're sort of in like a semicircle, the lettering. I think that's kind of cool, like harkens back to the old days. But who has the best socks in the NBA?
I mean, you know my weakness for powder light blue. I think Memphis's are really nice when they're not wearing the Sound uniforms. I think those are good. Brooklyn's are nice. Boston's are good too.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that we can even ask this question now, because Stance is now the official sock of the NBA. It used to be that it was just white socks, black socks. That's pretty much it in the NBA. Now there's actually, they have some style to them, and I love them. I think the Bulls are one of the best ones. Stance obviously is a sponsor of the podcast now. That's part of why we're talking about them. But the other reason we're talking about them is because it's an awesome product, and the socks looks really good. I actually got a pair of the Bulls in-game socks from them and played them. They're pretty awesome. I really enjoyed them, and I think that's going to be really cool for me to see some of the socks that have come out. The Hoops for Troops have looked good. There are some special Christmas Day socks that are already on sale as well. I think it's just, it's cool to add that level of aesthetic now to something that I think was long ignored. I'm glad that Stance is now involved as the official sock of the league.
And to be able to do it in a way that doesn't compromise, you know, you're not just doing it for the aesthetic. It's a sock that doesn't, because these are athletic, you know, competitions, and that can do that while accomplishing those goals, I think is a great use of it. And it's also something that fans can engage with. We've talked about how, you know, you can't always necessarily wear a jersey to work or something like that, but you can wear socks to work.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I mean, it used to just be that the NBA socks, you couldn't buy them anymore. Now you can, and you should. So wear what the pros wear and go to stance.com. If you're not wearing Stance, you are just wearing socks. All right, so the actual game here, Memphis looks to be back on track a little bit offensively. I didn't watch that much of this game, but would you care to guess who was 5 of 6 from the field, 6 of 6 from the line, and had 16 points in 17 minutes tonight?
Just for fun, I'm going to say Tony Allen.
No, that would be Enes Kanter. Would you also care to guess who was minus 10 in the plus-minus today?
Enes Kanter.
that is in fact
against
correct.
Against that world beating Memphis second unit.
Yeah, that's true. Russell Westbrook was 5 of 8 on threes, had 40 points, 14 assists, although he did have 8 turnovers. I think the bigger problem for the Thunder is just their defense. You know, Kevin Durant is out for sure. That's an issue. But they're just not stopping anybody. I mean, 122 to a Grizzlies offense that had been one of the worst in the league up until their game against Minnesota over the weekend. That's just not really acceptable. That's why I continue to think that Oklahoma City is a little bit below where the Spurs and the Warriors are right now, despite their top-end talent, is that they're just not quite defending at the level that they need to be.
Yeah. I think that's definitely fair. Mario Chalmers, 29 points. He's done really well since the trade.
I need to go back and watch this game. I don't know how the hell he was 13 out of 15 from the line.
Please tell me you're not going to go back and just watch his free throw attempts, because if you do that, I'm going
to
be kind of...
Well, impressed. I'd like to see the fouls that led to the free throws. I don't need to watch like the actual free throws themselves. We have the technology.
We do.
We can rebuild his free throw attempts. That was awful.
Yeah, it was.
Let's move on. I didn't actually watch that much of this game. Maybe I'll have some more thoughts on that tomorrow.
You watched Bulls-Pacers, right?
Yeah, I watched the fourth quarter of that. No George Hill for Indiana in this game. Derrick Rose, another basically sort of non-contact ankle sprain. He was driving baseline, kind of got bumped a little bit, and then sprained his left ankle. Had to go out of the game, at least. I mean, he looked like he could have sort of continued limping through, but was not in a great place. And I like that the Bulls at least took him out at the next timeout and ruled him out of the game. I think that's what you always have to do, especially with him. But this is who Derrick Rose is now, unfortunately. I mean, they're just, you have to imagine that even if he's not going to have a major injury that requires surgery, there are going to be these little nicks, and, you know, he's going to end up playing 60 games this year. I don't put the, you know, the double vision causing broken orbital in that category, but this is one of those ones that you just, you know, you have to expect from him at this point, and it's happens often enough that you have to think that it's a trend that can only continue.
How do you think the Bulls did defending Paul George?
George played really well.
Yeah.
I mean, I did think that Jimmy Butler did not have much of a chance one-on-one against Paul George when he tried to create. I think that Paul George may have even seen that Jimmy Butler sort of taking on his mantle as the 3-and-D, but like a little bit, you know, I guess a lot more than three offensively mantle in the East. And Paul George is back to say that, no, I'm still a much better player than Jimmy Butler. I think really even on both ends, I might say. I think Butler has a couple of body types of guys where he can do a little bit better job than Paul George on. Just from having a little bit more strength, but he doesn't have the length or explosiveness that Paul George does, or that kind of the ability to get his shot off quite the way that George can. But it was another defensive struggle that the Bulls were involved in, despite what we thought about Hoiberg going into the game. They were like 26th in offense and the 5th in defense. And I think they're going more with a defensive look lately, and they've been grinding out these wins, even though they haven't been pretty of late.
Yeah, I've been very surprised by them as a whole. It looks like, so Taj played 31 minutes and Mirotić played 17. Do you know why that happened?
Mirotić just can't hit a shot lately.
Yeah.
You know,
is
think
that simple?
Just, and granted, he was decent in plus-minus, and I think that just, as with last year, the fact that he's missing shots understates his value a little bit, because he does provide the spacing. And there are possessions in this game where it was Rose, Butler, Gibson, and Noah all out there. And, you know, Gibson and Noah at one time in a different era when they were better players, where they were able to score okay when those guys were on the floor together. Now they both just seem to be camping out in the lane at all times. And just, you know, Rose was running pick and rolls, getting two guys on him, and just had nowhere to throw the ball when all those guys were out there. So, but... You know, I mean, I think that Noah still looks pretty good defensively. Gibson still looks pretty good defensively. So maybe they're just going to try and win with defense, and it'll, you know, new coach, same as the old in that respect. But, you know, Tony Snell actually had a pretty nice defensive game down the end as well. He doesn't do as well when he is matched up one-on-one against guys. He doesn't quite have the strength or the quickness. But he did do very well guarding C.J. Miles in this game. He had some real nice closeouts on him as time wound down, and the Bulls played real good defense at the end, as did the Pacers. But without Rose, the Bulls didn't have that much chance to score, and they just held on.
Anything else you have on this game?
Yeah, a couple small notes. This was an interesting game of chicken because the Bulls were up one. They got the ball back, I think, after I can't remember if the Pacers scored or not, but the Bulls basically had the ball at like 40 seconds left. And Hoiberg called timeout, and he put Gasol back in the game. It had been Noah. They'd gone offense, defense before that. And actually, Noah played great defense, but Monte Ellis hit an incredible layup to bring the Pacers closer. So Hoiberg decided he was going to bring back in Gasol, and I understand that because they're on offense, but they didn't actually go to Gasol. He wasn't spaced out anywhere where he was going to keep the defense from helping. So it didn't really make much sense to bring him in. And then the worry was that Frank Vogel was going to go with no timeout, and then you get to come right back at him, and you have Gasol on the floor instead of Noah. I probably would have just stuck with Noah for that reason. Gasol actually did a nice job and was able to stop Ellis as he drove to the basket, and then the Pacers inbounded it to Paul George, and Jimmy Butler blocked his shot at the end. The other thing is that when they were inbounding on the baseline with about 4 seconds left, Vogel stuck with Lavoie Allen and Jan Mahimi in the game for an offensive possession where there's no chance of a defensive possession afterwards and you need a bucket. That didn't make any sense to me either. And, you know, as it turned out, there wasn't really much space, and Butler was able to make a play. I don't know whether it was fail or not, but I think a lot of times coaches just keep guys in the game like that, and there's just no point to it. I mean, you might, even if you're not going to throw those guys the ball, just put in some small guys and either make the big guys who are guarding them think about coming over to help, or you make the other team put in some other small guys that then, if you're going to go to Paul George anyway, at least now there are smaller guys in the game for him to try to finish over at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in firm agreement with you. I think that it gives them more to think about, and it can actually affect the way that defenses choose to defend it.
All right, a couple other notes here on Phoenix Lakers. I watched the second half of this game. It's got to be hard for Byron Scott at times because they got killed in the fourth quarter, 40-26. And granted, you know, I don't think Scott's some amazing coach. I don't think that they're incredibly well coached defensively. But you saw them out there with an all-reserve unit, and you're thinking, all right, why don't they bring in more defense? They're getting killed here. I mean, the Suns scored 40 points while only shooting 2 3-point attempts in the quarter. You know, that's when you know you're playing bad defense because you're just not even getting to help on guys. They're giving up a ton of backdoors. T.J. Warren had a great fourth quarter. That guy is a professional scorer. He just finds ways to get buckets. But there's no one that Scott could really bring in. I guess it was Hibbert, but he had played, you know, about as many minutes as he could in this game in the third quarter. So, and there's nobody else to go to. The backups all have no one who can defend. Larry Nance is okay, but he's a rookie. He's not going to be some great shakes. So there's really, he's got Lou Williams in there, Huertas. I mean, you're just never going to stop anybody with that second unit, especially.
Yeah, a part of it for me is just that they don't, it's a design flaw with this team, which made me think that they weren't really going to be competitive this year. You think about that they got Lou Williams on a contract that I think we both think was a nice deal for them, but he doesn't really add something they were necessarily missing, and they are devoid of that player on this team, especially when they're starting Meta, because he would be that guy, I guess, conceptually, but he's their only guy.
Yeah, and he's actually shot the ball better than you would think, but that's not going to happen. I mean, he was out of the NBA for basically the last 2 years because he couldn't score well enough and really kind of slipped defensively. I mean, he only looks like a good defender on this team when there's basically nobody else on the wing at all. I think I'd like to see them try to give Anthony Braun a little bit more run, but I don't know that he can shoot the ball well enough yet, and he's still a rookie, so even if he has some of the physical talent to be a stopper, it's probably not really going to work for them. All right, let's get into the meat of our podcast here. Is it time to panic? We'll give each one a 1-10 rating. Let's start with the Memphis Grizzlies, who were a lot more panicky before they won their last two games. They actually are now 6-6 in the eighth seed in the West. However, they still have a pretty ugly differential. Is it time to panic yet for the Memphis Grizzlies?
I'm going to give it a 4, and that's a 4 because I don't think they're a realistic title contender. If that was something you thought before the season, that number should be a lot higher because I think they're not going to be that. So, but for me, they're at a 4 because I think they are what I expected them to be, which is a low-end playoff team.
Yeah, that's true. I think especially the fact that Mike Conley now has gotten back to playing better these last few games. He had a real nice game again tonight. Makes me feel good. If you can think that he'll get back now to last year's levels, which he had not been in that real rough stretch that they had at the beginning. I mean, they still have a negative 6.7 net rating, but I mean, basically, all of that is just that 50-point loss to the Warriors.
And they got annihilated by the Cavs, too.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they lost by 30 to the Cavs. I mean, a lot of that is just stuff that happened in the first week, and this is a team that has reliably outperformed their point differential. I don't know if that's just noise. I mean, you expect that there just naturally be some teams that do it for like 2 or 3 years in a row just out of random chance. So we don't know that that's skill or luck necessarily. But nonetheless, I think that they're okay. I think it's pretty clear that they are not among the West's elite teams. The chances of them getting home court advantage, I would say, are basically nothing right now. But yeah, I'd say probably like, you know, a 4 for them. I mean, really, the only big reason to panic is if they do so poorly that Mike Conley starts thinking about going elsewhere. And I think this is going to be 45 win team, something like that. That might have been panic worthy before the season. But so yeah, you know, I'd say 4.
What about the worry if Mike Conley starts to feel like maybe he's not going to be worth a max contract? Do you start to worry then too?
Well, if he keeps playing, if he gets back to this level, I think then he's pretty clearly worth a max contract. And regardless of how he plays this year, I think unless he gets injured or something, he's going to be worth a max contract to somebody.
That's exactly. That's where I get worried a little bit if I'm Memphis, where I'm not totally comfortable throwing the 5 years at him, and then you sit there and basically somebody else is making the same offer with maybe a younger, more fun team. But I think that they're in a reasonably good spot with him. I don't think that anybody, I don't think like the Wizards or anybody like that's going to beat down Mike Conley's door for obvious reasons.
New Orleans Pelicans.
8.
Why isn't it a 10?
Because they haven't been bad with anything close to their normal unit, so you still have this glimmer of hope that it's like, oh, all they need is to be right.
Anything close to their normal unit? It's basically, well, I guess Pondexter and two starters are out. Pondexter is out still,
and Evans.
Evans is out still.
And those guys are very important to the team, and you can talk about that, you know, being without them is a bad sign. You know, being this bad without them is a bad sign. But yeah, I think it's there just because it's still early enough, but if they're even close to where they are now 5 games from now, then that ratchets to a 9 or a 10.
Well, isn't it panic worthy for them to not make the playoffs?
In terms of what? I mean, it doesn't really affect the arc of their franchise. Anthony Davis already signed. If Anthony Davis hadn't re-signed, then yes, but really...
Yeah, well, they do have Gordon and Anderson as free agents. You know, they have a, perhaps you could look at it as an embattled GM, maybe not the most stable ownership in the world. I don't think that they're going to fire Gentry or anything after this year. I think they'll give him more than 1 year, no matter what happens, because especially with the injuries as a potential excuse. I mean, I would say 9 for me. And the only reason it's not 10 is because they've started playing a little bit better recently, especially on defense, to where they at least are being competitive now. But I mean, I think even in this better period, that, and the AD missed a couple of games as well, but he's going to miss more for sure. I mean, well, not for sure, but that's certainly been his history. But yeah, you know, I don't see any evidence to indicate that they're going to be playing at better than 500 anytime soon.
Yeah.
And they need to play it much better than that to make the playoffs. I mean, they are 1-9. Is that right? Yeah. I mean, that's just, you're so far behind the eight ball at this point. They have to play at a 54-win pace, you said, to even get to last year. I mean, I think it's a 9. I think not making the playoffs, to me, is absolutely time to panic. I mean, that's like, you know, I mean, I guess there's a whole nother level of panic for, like, when the ramifications go beyond this year.
Like the team we're going to talk about very soon?
yeah, when the ramifications go beyond this year. But, I mean, just based on this year, you know, it would be a massive disappointment for this team to not make the playoffs, and I think that is a very substantial likelihood right now. I'm going to go 9 for
them.
That's
definitely fair. Brooklyn.
Well, you have to look at it from the standpoint of preseason expectations, right? I think that might be another way to consider it, too. I mean, and you know, everyone else, you're welcome to come up with your own definitions of panic. Just please don't be limited to ours. But I mean, their preseason expectations were, what, 28, 29 wins, something like that. If you were someone who believed that this team could compete for the playoffs, then you're out of 10, obviously. You know, I think it's basically fait accompli that they're out of it, especially because, as we'll get to, the East is looking much better than it had. You know, I think there are plenty of teams that are even around 500 in the East. You have to conclude that it's going to take 41 wins. It's not going to be 38 like it has been in past years to get into the East playoffs. But if you think that they, if you're thinking, all right, you know, I was just hopeful they could get to their over-under and win like 29 games or something, then maybe your panic level is like a 7. Because again, I mean, they've just banked all these losses. What's the number for you? I mean, I'm going to go, and then also, I guess the other component of it too is the beyond this year.
Are you going to take that from me?
Yeah, yeah. Is anyone going to want to go here?
Yeah, that's why it's a 10 for me, is because they don't have their pick. So that was always an issue. And the sales pitch is tough now because this is a team that they don't have a lot of the justifications that other teams do of like, oh, we're young or, oh, our pieces are just learning how to fit together. I mean, yeah, they have had turnover.
They haven't even had any injuries.
Yeah, like they just aren't good. And when you watch them, they're probably a team that I think of them more as like a single max guy for this year. I haven't looked at their number, their hard numbers in the last little bit.
Yeah, I think they can get to like 35
million. Yeah, so that's more of a single max guy. So if you're sitting there and you're Kevin Durant and you look at this team, you go, am I good enough to make this team relevant? And I mean, obviously a great player is going to think that about most teams, but I just feel like being a member of the Nets would be miserable right now. And also, they're also hurt by the fact that there is not a strong point guard class this year, and so
I was just going to say
and
that.
So,
yeah,
like,
that's a
great
point.
Unless they and we know that that's such an important part of satisfaction, especially if you're a complimentary player, whether that's a really good complimentary player or not, is that having somebody to get you the ball. And I would argue that they have the most hopeless point guard situation in the league.
Yeah, despite Jarrett Jack's heroics on Saturday night against the Warriors, and just his age as well. Even if you think he's going to play. Okay, and he's certainly not a guy who ever has been known for making his teammates better. And I do think that point guard, while there are a lot of good ones, noted this on past programs, that you just, if you don't have a good point guard or really anyone who can create in the pick and roll and at least, you know, score enough to keep the defense honest and distribute enough to where you can't just only load up on him to just run a pick and roll decently, if you don't have that option as a way to just like get everyone involved, that's really limiting if you don't have that player on your team. So, yeah, I would say for the overall direction of the franchise, you know, I think everyone's panic rating was probably at like 8.5 before the season started, and now maybe it's at a 9.5 or a 10. I mean, they're really Rondé has been the only kind of bright spot on this team from a long-term standpoint, and the fact that Brook Lopez still looks like he's pretty decent and he's under contract for 3 more years. But, yeah, I think both for this year and going forward, I'm going to go 9.5.
How much are Celtics fans going to hate Rondé Hollis-Jefferson by the end of this year? I just think they're just going to have this like weird internet blood feud with Rondé Hollis-Jefferson because he might push them up his effort and all that might push them up a spot or two in the draft.
Yeah. All right. Lakers.
This is the most complicated one for me because if you thought the Lakers were going to be good, I don't know how to think in your brain. Like, the Lakers were going to be bad this year. And unlike Brooklyn, there isn't this situation where you know they're going to lose their pick. It is more likely than not, probably, depending on where they end up, because I don't think they're going to have the worst record in the league. So that is a problem. So I'd have them at about, let's say, like a 6. But if you are thinking about it for this year, I mean, they're just done. But I always thought they were done.
Well, yeah, again, this is a team that had like an over-under of like 29 wins. But there are a number of components to the panic meter, right? One is we got these free agency coming up. Another one is how are our young guys looking? And I think Clarkson has looked about how you would probably expect. Randall has had some moments, but he also has had some real stinker games. As well, I mean, his only real big game that he had was when he was just abused Dirk Nowitzki one-on-one. Aside from that, he hasn't really had any particularly effective games. Russell has not looked that great you know, I don't think it's time to panic on him yet, but certainly a lot of the concerns that you would have had about him have proven true so far, at least. And he's also just not being put in a position to succeed where they're playing a spread pick and roll with spacing where he can find shooters or, you know, really operate and use some of the dribble moves and some of the vision that he has. You know, that's not something that he's not going to be in a position to look good, I think, until they get a new coach or some new personnel. So I think with all that, I would be at a 9 right now. Kobe has looked, I would say, worse than I think even either of us anticipated. You know, a lot worse than last year, certainly. Because last year, at least, he had games where he could at least get hot at certain points during games. And he actually looked, I thought, better athletically last year than I would have expected. And now he looks a lot worse, and he's just missing games with, like, a sore back and stuff. It really seems like, you know, this is going to be the end for him for sure. Whereas it didn't necessarily look that way until he injured his shoulder last year. So, yeah, I think when you consider all that, you know, it's got to be like 10.
If Kobe said tomorrow, "I'm definitely coming back next year," where would your panic meter go? Like a 15?
I remember one time when I was in college, I had this old Nissan 300ZX Turbo. It was like a 1991, and I loved cars back then. I put this chip in it to get it up to like 400 horsepower, and my cousin and I went on a long road trip, so we went into the Rocky Mountains west of Denver, and, you know, it was basically like a 5,000-foot climb up into the mountains, and, you know, I was being a typical college kid and driving like a jackass and redlining it, going pretty fast, and unbeknownst to me, a piece of cardboard got sucked up off the road and was basically blocking the radiator, and so as we, like, kind of got over the crest of the mountains, the car kind of started to wheeze and, like, wasn't getting as much power. And so I looked down at the temperature gauge, and the H on the temperature gauge was maybe, like, probably at the 10 o'clock position, and the needle was at 12 o'clock.
Oh, God.
It was, like... So I, blew out the head gasket of the car. Pretty stupid, obviously, to not look at your... You know, I was in college, whatever. I should have done a better job, but... That's where I think the panic meter would be if Kobe said he was coming back, would be like, you know, just off the charts completely, like my car's temperature gauge was.
I love Nate road trip stories.
All right, who's next on this list here?
The Kings. You want me to go?
Yeah, please.
4.
I agree with you, and... There have obviously been all these negative stories. They were 1-7. Cousins was cursing out Kral, blah, blah, blah. They're an organization in turmoil, and I don't mean to diminish that. I think they obviously have a lot of stuff to work on there. But that said, they're 4-3 in games that Cousins has played, and they've looked basically about what you would have expected when he's been in there. So, and he's been dominant. I mean, and this whole thing with him shooting threes, I think, has alleviated a lot of the concerns that we might have had about them playing the two centers together. Rudy Gay has been okay offensively so far. Rondo has been better, although I don't think he's someone who really helps a ton just because of his lack of shooting. He's been better than anyone could have expected so far, even though he has a ceiling on him. So I think actually, you know, if you thought they were going to be a 35-win team, if you thought that maybe at the top end they could challenge for the playoffs, with everyone healthy, they're right on track for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And people, I think, forget that this team was doing very well last year before Cousins got viral meningitis.
Yeah, they were 9-5.
They were 9-5. They were 6-4 in their first 10 games. They were playing well, and they were doing that against the hard schedule.
They had beaten some good teams, too, right?
Spurs, yeah, I believe.
Yeah. They were very high in like some of the power rankings until then, and I think they have a better team this year than they did at that time last year.
Yeah, I think that. There are a couple of narratives about the Kings, and one of them is that they have some issues with ownership in their front office. I believe in those, but Cousins is good enough to carry a team, and they have talent that is better suited for him, even though they gave up way too much to get it. So I think that they're in a pretty good spot. I mean, obviously they're very Cousins dependent, but that's true of any team, really. Other than the Warriors, but it's totally true of the Warriors too. You know, like, that's just the way that this is. So I think that Cousins has a reasonable chance. He looks fully recovered from his from his Achilles issue. So, yeah, I think they're in a good spot. I mean, they are hurt a little bit by the West, just kind of teams like Dallas and Phoenix looking better than we expected. So that might give them a little bit more of a buffer, or a little bit less of a buffer than we thought after the Pelicans just have done what they've done. But, yeah, so I think a 4 is about right.
Yeah, Ben McLemore might be a reason for pessimism. He is an 8.1 PR. He started again the other night, but it did not finish, I don't think. And he, it had been totally out of the rotation at times. But Willie Cauley-Stein has been everything that you would have hoped that he would be so far, both on both ends, at least in the potential that he's shown, and also his ability to roll to the basket. So I think they might even have a player in Seth Curry if he can get a little bit more time. He's going to be a terrible defensive player, but he's someone who can at least get some more shooting on the floor with these guys as a backup to Rondo with Collison. Kind of, I haven't really heard. Have you heard a timetable for his return yet?
I have not, but yeah, I've liked Seth Curry as a kind of change of pace point guard since he didn't get drafted. I advocated for the Warriors to sign him then, and not because he's Stephen Curry's brother, but because I think he can contribute in that way.
All right. This is one that you might think shouldn't be on this list because they're 4-4. The Washington Wizards.
2. I just think their team is good when they're healthy, and I think that they have more talent than they've showed. They've missed Beal a lot. But if what you were expecting for them was to maybe be the team that was the clearest challenger to Cleveland, they're going to have a hard road now. Like, I think that's pretty clear. You know, even if they can get up to like the 2 or the 3, that's going to be a challenge for them. So I think, but for me, in terms of them like making the playoffs and potentially even hosting a series, I don't think any of that's out of the question yet. Partially because they're 4-4, they're not in this bad position, and partially because the Bulls haven't looked great. You know, they have. I think they can sort out a lot of their issues. We've talked about this earlier in this podcast. And the Hawks have looked better than expected, but Bazemore being hurt, you know, like, it just feels like they're just a little bit off. And I think that gives them a window. And Miami, we know Miami. So I think that I don't worry about them getting in the dance. And I think that no team has really established themselves as the number 2. So that's why I have it at a 2 right now.
I'm actually much higher, and I'm going to kind of more adopt the longer-term view here. I'm at a 7 for them.
Wow.
And it's both short-term, and it's short-term, but then also what that short-term means for the long-term. They have a negative 4.5 net rating right now, and granted, part of that is because Beal missed some time, but Bradley Beal is not, I mean, he's a good player, he's important to them, but also he's not a player who should just completely destroy what you're trying to do. They have no depth right now. Maybe it gets better when Allen Anderson comes back. But again, you know, you're relying on him coming back to really, I mean, to be good. They are lucky to be 4-4 right now with that differential. And so you consider that. And even with John Wall on the floor, they only have like, you know, a 1 net rating or so, which is not good. And they're terrible whenever he's off. I don't think that that's necessarily going to change that much when Beal comes back, because units with Beal and without Wall have traditionally struggled. But then this is a team that needs to at least get into the second round and have a competitive showing if they're to have any hope of getting Durant. And that's what they've been hanging their hat on for years with this whole organizational strategy. There is not that much else out there in free agency, I don't think, that can really put them over the top to really be a contender unless they get him. And so I've seen enough during this start to make me think that I don't see them as a team that's going to make it to the second round. And another part of that, too, is that the rest of the East has looked pretty good. There's really only one terrible team in the East. Everyone else looks like totally decent, and you have to expect that some of those teams, like the fight to get into the top half of that East playoff bracket, or at least to avoid playing one of the top 2-3 seeds, is going to be a lot stiffer than I think we anticipated at the start of the year. So yeah, I am very worried, and that's as someone who foolishly predicted that they would be the number 1 seed, even though I wasn't at all confident in that prediction. And also another thing, Cleveland looks way better than we would have thought with all their injuries problems to start the year. So yeah, I am not optimistic about this team so far.
something I hadn't honestly considered until now is if they miss out on Durant to whoever, do you think they're a team that would make a kind of a really big offer for Harrison Barnes?
Yeah, they might, especially if they're trying to play a little bit smaller here. But that also, remember, they have to wait until the 12th to do that.
Yeah.
June 12th.
But, I mean, and if they make an offer for DeRozan, I'm just going to go crazy.
No, they wouldn't do that with already having Beal.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, they need another guy on the wing, and it's not like a huge wing class here either. So I don't know. That's probably something to consider is, like, who they would go after if they don't get Durant. But I don't see anyone on that list, unless it's Al Horford, who wouldn't go. I don't see him leaving Atlanta to go to Washington.
Not especially a Washington team without Durant. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see people on this list where you're going to put you over the top to be a conference finals team, much less, you know, a potential championship team. And then, you know, you're looking at this team kind of just being mired where they've been the last 2 years, which is much better considering the sorry history of this franchise over the last three decades, than they had been. And Wall and Beal are nice players, but you're going to need more than that.
Well, and what's really scary for them, as opposed to some other teams, is that it's kind of Durant or nothing, not only in terms of this class, but moving forward. Like, this isn't the reason that he's more interesting, though D.C. is a metropolitan city and it has appeal. It's kind of in that tier below where players are going to – it's not going to turn players off, but it's not going to be really bringing them in. And so then if you're in that group, you're competing with a different class of team because so many other teams are going to have space. So are you going to – you know, it's not like you just roll that over and you go, oh, we'll take another bite at the apple like the Lakers are doing and things like that. If you're the Wizards, you kind of have to think about what are we going to do now?
Yeah, I mean, you're sort of looking at like Luol Deng, Nick Batum, Chandler Parsons, that level of guy. Or you're just – if you don't get any of those guys, then you're waiting to just try to get into the restricted market and then no guarantee you even get that. So – Or you're going back then to the traditional big market instead, you know, with like a Ryan Anderson type or something like that. I mean, there's not even that many traditional power forwards that I think would help them a ton either. So, yeah, I mean, this is true for a lot of teams. It's kind of Durant or bust. But since they've been talked about as the most likely scenario, they got to start playing better this year. They just have not been that good despite the 4-4 record. All right. One more for you. Houston Rockets.
Whew. I want to say an 8. I could understand it being a little bit higher than that, but I think that, you know, they've been without Demo. I think that their talent is, you know, I think that they're better than they've played.
But how is Demo going to be like some panacea for this team?
Well, because their power forward position has not been good, and he's another guy who could be good.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to help the defense.
He won't necessarily help the defense, but like you think about, so last year, a lot of their big man minutes went to three guys. They went to Dwight, Terrence Jones, and Demo when they were healthy. Those guys have played, I believe it's 13 out of 33 games, so 11 times three. That's not good, and that should get better. And I think that there is a thing with this team, and we saw it with Marcus Thornton actually playing, is that you need to reach a certain baseline of talent. And yeah, guys like Harden haven't played super well. But yeah, I think that what is terrifying for them, which is different than the Wizards, is they have to be kind of looking in the face now of a really tough playoff road, no matter where they go, because I think the Warriors and Spurs are at a place now where it's going to be hard to catch them, and being behind everybody else isn't putting you in a good spot, because you're going to have to, while the Thunder haven't been great, the Clippers haven't necessarily been great, they've both dealt with some injuries, you have to outplay them the rest of the way to get in front of them.
They've beaten the Clippers on the road without Chris Paul, the Kings without DeMarcus Cousins in a squeaker, the Magic at home in overtime, and their only real good win that you could talk to is beating the Thunder at home. And they, every loss that they have had, they've gotten, I mean, I was okay. I thought they might have righted the ship. Here are their last four games. Lost at home to the Nets. Lost on the road to the Nuggets in a game that wasn't that close by 9. They lost at home to the Nets by 8. They lost at home to the Mavs by 12 in a game that wasn't that close. And they lost at home to the Celtics in a game that wasn't that close by 16. They were down by almost 30 at one point in the fourth quarter. I am done thinking of this team as I'm sort of just, I mean, because, you know, we look at the schedule and we think, all right, you know, these are two good teams that are playing, or we think, oh, you know, this team is pretty likely to win. You know, I think we all kind of mentally do that as we're looking at the schedule. I am done with thinking of this team as a good team in that respect until they start to prove it to me. And they have a negative 8 net rating right now, and I don't think they've played a particularly hard schedule either. And they have one good win, essentially, on the whole year. And Harden isn't playing well. Lawson isn't playing well. Their individual guys are all bad. You know, it's not like you can say that this is just unlucky kind of fundamental stuff for them, you know, with like some amazing three-point percentage or something by opponents or something like that. Like, they can't stop anybody, and they can't score. It's just I am at a 9.5 for this team right now on the panic meter because this is a team that was talked about as getting to they got to the West Finals last year. They're getting talked about as doing that again this year. And I just don't see how that happens unless Lawson and Harden, who just haven't looked good and haven't looked good athletically, can just get much, much better. And Howard, too, has also not looked good athletically. I mean, I think the eye test is what is so damning for these guys, not to mention the fact that their underlying fundamentals are so bad.
Is there any team that has a realistic chance of having the wheels fall off that would be more interesting in terms of what they could do in a worst-case scenario than the Rockets?
Yeah, I mean, I do think they can still make the playoffs.
Well, yeah, so do I. But, like, if the wheels fell off, if this team was, like, let's say they were five, you know, if they were pretty clearly out of it when the deadline happens, like, there are so many things they could do. I'm not saying they would, but they're in such a kind of crazy place with the talent that they have that if things go bad, I think they're the most interesting team in the league for that week.
Yeah, and they certainly have a mentality where they do that. I think they're a long way away from
for
that,
sure.
Though. I mean, I think McHale, they would probably move on from him, although I don't know that this is necessarily his fault. I mean, what's he doing so differently than he was last year when they were good, right? But, you know, I think that's the sort of change that needs to be made. But, you know, I don't think that he's going to get James Harden or Ty Lawson or Dwight Howard's burst back. You know, those are the biggest things. And then the supporting guys just haven't been good enough either. So, and there's not enough kind of Daryl Morey little finds. You know, Capella's been okay, but he's not, I don't think he's a starting center in this league still in the sum total. So, yeah, I don't see, other than those guys just playing better, and they do have good histories. I think they're not going to continue to be this bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and Harden has scored 40 points in a couple of games here, but he's just not getting to the basket as much as he was in the aggregate.
And,
I mean, so I think he can go off when he gets hot, when he gets to the foul line, but you know, he's not able to really just blow by guys the way he was.
And something that I need to get better at myself is, you know, like I had high expectations for the Rockets, just, you know, in terms of my own stuff. There's a podcast that I kind of wish didn't exist anymore on that line with one of our friends.
Oh, we all feel that
and,
way.
But what I need to do better at with that is separating out what I think this team can be from what they have been so far. And so, yeah, they certainly still have that potential, but they have not looked anything like that. So for me, speaking as an analyst, like, I need to get better at saying I'll believe it when I see it, instead of assuming that still, when we have clear evidence to the contrary in a big enough size to say we need to listen to this.
Yeah, and I think maybe the biggest example that you could point to for this team. Well, no, I guess there are a couple of examples, one good and one bad. One would be that 2013 Lakers, right? That was a team that, you know, they struggled right out of the gate. They fired Mike Brown, sort of righted the ship. And then when D'Antoni came back in, I think they were like 8 games under 500. And then they finally made it back to the playoffs. But Kobe tore his Achilles, and they actually played pretty well the second half of that year, ultimately, mostly on the back of Kobe having an unbelievable season. Before he tore his Achilles, but, you know, also a Dwight Howard team, interestingly enough. And then the Cavs of last year might be the other one, right? They're basically 500, but then they made that trade that goosed everything. And then they also, LeBron came back from that sabbatical looking better, right? So those, I think maybe, you know, there's a lot of potential trade chips in the war chest here, you know, someone like Capella, some of these second round guys, McDaniels. You know, I think there are plenty of guys who have value around the league where they could bring in another starter level guy if they're willing to get into the assets, but they might be loath to do that given the fact that even that may not get them to real contention this year. So it's going to be something to really monitor for sure. But I can't really remember a team that started this poorly over its first 10 games that really came back to maybe make the playoffs, but that really actually came back to contend in a given year. I mean, this is much worse than the Cavs were over the first 10 games last year. So, yeah, it's I think you got to be at like a 9.5, 10 panic rating for them.
Yeah, that's certainly fair, especially because they have title aspirations. Like, they're a team that has legitimate title aspirations. This isn't, you know, a team like the Nets or the Kings or something, you know, underperforming expectations. They might have a narrower window than people thought, and if that window does not include this year, then things get real.
All right, well, let's wrap it up for today then. You got anything to plug before we go?
Yeah, I have a piece that's going up for the Sporting News tomorrow on Kevin Durant, and that's all I'm going to say.
All right, man. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. If you wanted to like our Facebook pages, that is a way to keep up with both of our writings. Danny also has a mailing list. He is far more prolific in the writing arena than I am, but he is Danny LaRue NBA on Facebook. I am Nate Duncan NBA on Facebook. We also usually do a mailbag on Thursdays that I'll post on Facebook as well if you want to participate in that. Also, giving us a review or rating on iTunes has been absolutely instrumental in our success, and we're very thankful for all the listeners who have helped out in that way. So that's a way that you can support the podcast as well. And also, maybe go buy yourself some awesome Stant socks. Check those out. They look fantastic. They're our new sponsor, which we appreciate very much as well. All right. So, Danny, thanks again for coming on. We will talk to you all next time.